Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you.
Amid yet another unprecedented BC wildfire season, I'm walking down a dusty farm road in the scorching sun's heat. Along the way, I pass llamas and friendly farm dogs trying to cool themselves against the unseasonable, but ever more common, hot weather. My destination? A quaint cabin nestled in a now crisp, tinder-dry forest, where I am about to meet my dear friend and recently retired NDP MLA, Doug Donaldson. As a child of the 80s, growing up in the Northwest, I have vivid memories of plain and forest so thick you could barely see into them. How densely they were packed, the willow, hazelbrush, spruce, birch, poplar, also known as aspen, cedar, and more, all nestled beneath towering cottonwood. Of course, I now know that these landscapes themselves had been vastly altered in the last 100 years of the colonial interference in the area. As I walk towards Doug Donaldson property, a prevalent concern rests heavily on my mind: the deteriorating health of BC trees amidst the looming health crisis. After 26 years on Vancouver Island, I've recently returned to the Kispiak, Skeena, and Bulkley Valleys, and in the following 7 years I've been here, I've become increasingly concerned by the obvious decline in tree and general forest health in the area, a trend felt across Canada and around the globe. It's painfully clear to me that the forests of my childhood no longer reside here, and I'm scared. I'm eager to delve into a discussion with Doug and gain insight into the government's pulse on these pressing issues and, possibly, even take away some hope for the future. British Columbia is part of a large and diverse province spanning 11 degrees of latitude and 25 degrees of longitude. Covering approximately 95 millions of hectares, is the third largest province in Canada, and at four times the size of Great Britain, only 30 nations worldwide are larger. The climate ranges from the Mediterranean on the coast to subarctic at higher elevations and to the north, with forests dominating vegetation, with grasslands, scrub, and tundra also present. Canada is the top world exporter of manufactured forest products, with British Columbia playing a major role, particularly raw lumber exports. According to a 1995 Forestry of Ministry report by Robert G. Brown, approximately 85% of British Columbia's provincial forest is owned and managed by the province for diverse resource values beyond just timber. Management over the last 100-plus years that has vastly reshaped and permanently altered the landscape of British Columbia, effects of which will permeate well into our future. A recent 2021 report by the Wildlife Conservative Society, WCS, and Shape of Nature Institute has sounded an alarm, reporting that currently nearly 1 in 4 of Canada's trees species are at risk of disappearing in Canada. That is approximately 25% of all tree species are facing a significant risk of extinction within this country. I arrive at the studio to find Doug working on a book he's writing about our long-lasting and now retired local mayor, Alice Maitland. In hindsight, it was probably not the best idea to put the mic on the table. So, of course, throughout the interview at different times, you can hear Doug and I both tapping or moving our cups. The conversation was also, while on a heavy topic, did involve much laughter, so at different times there might be laughter that might seem out of place. We catch up on small talk and talk about the llamas as we get settled around a large table before I ask him his connection to the trees.
My connections to the forests are on lots of levels. I grew up in Ontario where there were lots of forests. In retrospect, maybe not a natural forest because we had had to draw a line around it and make it a national park, and that wasn't the best for natural ecosystem. We would spend summers in the Canadian Shield, roaming forests as a youngster, always being in close connection with the forest. And that influence that led me to a wildlife biology degree. And like many young people, I supported myself through 1 year of university working in a pulp mill back in the day in Hull, Quebec, then working in national parks for a decade in the Rockies, and more recently working for a forest silviculture company in the early 90s in Smithers. So had some direct experience as far as how the forest provides economically. And since I've come here and lived in Gitxsan territory for over 30 years, learned even more about close connections to the forest from Gitxsan. And then recently, I was the minister of the ministry with the longest name in the history of the legislature. I think I added it up one time, it was 56 letters, you know, over twice the number of letters in the alphabet. So I was minister of forest lands, natural resource operations, and rural development. I was responsible for 62 different acts.
For me, it all started with the loss of the willows in this area. They were the middlemen, so to speak. Their height and fullness filled in between the short hazelbrush and the towering cottonwood in the area. I watched the willow bark blister, limbs snap, and its almost complete collapse, only recently starting to slowly recover. So subtle the changes happened, you could almost miss it, convincing yourself the trees must have always looked like that. That white smear is just the bark, or those blisters. And cracking. Other trees followed, showing their own signs of distress. Bark like the pine that started to blacken with every rainfall, and whose blackness now lingers on the barks north-facing all year round. Soaring 80-foot aspen and birch that snap in half like the twigs at the slightest wind. Or maybe you've noticed the limp, bent, and distressed young saplings that increasingly line our highways and backroads. Or you've noticed the reddening of the hills as the spruce and pine deadfall change the landscape's color. Or perhaps it's the subtle changes to the views from the roads or windows. Houses and mountains, once behind thick veil of forest, now peek between the sparse broken and leaning trees left standing. The trees are dying. We're losing a lot more than trees, our air, our water, and our entire ecosystem is suffering, and with that goes our lifestyle and ways to earn income and provide for our families. An essential part of our ecosystem and commerce, trees offer homes to many species, including ourselves. Their roots help stabilize soil, filter and hold water, and provide nutrients for plants. They provide shelter and shade that help cool the surrounding area while helping reduce erosion and deforestation. And they play a crucial role in mitigating droughts caused by climate change, as well as flooding events caused by heavy rain. Trees help to build our homes and regulate climate by slowing down the rate of climate change by providing oxygen, absorbing carbon dioxide, and holding onto water. In spring, nutrients travel up trunks towards outstretched arms, laddened with foliage, each a budding leaf, its own solar panel, absorbing energy to help to be used in a complex process of growth. That this helps to slow down global warming. We hear birds chirping, woodpeckers drilling holes as deer dart between shadows and squirrels scamper beneath, bugs hibernating everywhere. Yet, despite all this wondrous biodiversity, forests around BC are collapsing at alarming rates. Like many northerners, my home and way of life is in the forest. And many of my neighbors rely on the forests and trees to provide income and food for their families. A 2023 article by Ben Parfit, March 2nd, titled "Houston Falling, Supersized mills lead to supersized problems for BC forests and workers," is a stark contrast to hopes and dreams toted in a 2004 Globe and Mail article by Peter Kennedy titled "Canfor Unveils Jumbo Sawmills." The 2004 article in the Globe and Mail quotes, "The development of such huge operations has been made possible by advances in computer technology and a wave of industry consolidation that ensures that a long-term supply of logs is available to keep them running." End quote. In his 2023 article, Parfit discusses how the supermills arrived at a preposterous time, just as beetle outbreak led to the death of millions of logpole pine trees. In response, the government allowed logging companies to increase their annual cut, all in an attempt to retrieve value from the deteriorating trees. All this, despite growing reports, like the 1996 report by Natural Resource Canada, Canadian Forest Service, Common Tree Diseases of British Columbia, that clearly showed a growing deterioration in tree health overall in British Columbia, supermills somehow continued to emerge. At the time supermills were being established, other forestry reports predicted that likely after the year 2000, the province's regeneration program would soon match that of the harvested area, a first in BC's colonial forest management history. It is also worth mentioning that the British Columbia Forestry reports published by the government during this time period and for subsequent years only focus on so-called, quote, important commercial tree species, end quote. This resulted in the exclusion from the tree counts and research studies of species like the willow, whose substantial decline was greatly altering the landscape and ecosystem, an oversight that, either intentionally or unintentionally, led to the narrowed perspective for decision makers in understanding the broader crisis at hand, and would have influenced the formation of future policy in decision-making processes. What emerged during the following decades, as documented in provincial government reports, were 8 supermills that collectively produced enough lumber every year to encircle our planet more than 24 times. When you started your job, what information was brought forward to you specific to forestry health in the forestry industry?
Well, when I became minister, it was 2017, and it was 2 days after the evacuation of Williams Lake due to the wildfires that season. So the immediate focus was on what, to that point, had been the worst wildfire season in BC's history. And that consumed a lot of time right off the bat. But it's a huge ministry, so I had 11 assistant deputy ministers, which most ministries have one or two. And so just getting through briefings from each assistant deputy minister with the crisis we were in took a while. And I always felt staff had provided me with excellent briefing notes, and I would go through every briefing note and read it before meetings and have a lot of questions for them, because every briefing note stimulated a lot of questions. So the material was sound, it was good, it was widespread, because it wasn't just forestry, it was wildlife. The caribou issue was huge, as well as the wildfires, and as well as the health of the coastal forest industry. So those were some big issues right off the bat.
What were some concerns of the forest industry?
The economic health of the coastal forest industry and the sustainability. I was briefed thoroughly on the trends, and the trends were there were less volume being harvested, more volume being exported than usual, and there were fewer jobs, and there was mills shutting down. So the first focus as far as the economic side of forestry was on trying to pull the coastal forest sector together and come up with some solutions.
One of the things that I noticed when I was starting to do the research for this, just trying to find out when did people start to notice that things were going awry in the forest, what I'm trying to find out is trying to get the pulse on the urgency and understanding of the large crisis that we are actively in. Do you feel like that was relayed to you in that position?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was pretty aware of the management approach that we've taken to the forests wasn't necessarily the best from my experience here in the Northwest. And so, you know, I think the crisis around scarcity of the forests for timber supply, I've been doing some historical research, and it's like, you know, the first time that came up was in the 1920s, when people locally here between Terrace and Burns Lake, the wood nearby the railway was logged out for ties and power poles. So the model that they had used at that point to have those ties produced from forests nearby the rail line disappeared, and there was, because there weren't any wood left close by. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing to think back, like whatever that is, 100 years ago, they were talking and thinking about forest health from a, there's not enough forest.
I noticed quite quickly is the trees being counted were the ones that were of value. And to me, it just seemed to lack understanding that the willow dying, like nowhere does it, I mean, they might be now, I haven't looked at the more recent one, but nowhere at one point does the willow get counted, because of course it's not a moneymaker. Meanwhile, in this area, you know, it just was depleted. It's just now starting to come back. To me, it really showed an oversight in the research being so focused on the money trees, where I was, but those money trees need the other trees.
Yeah,
so I guess to me, I kind of was really disappointed and surprised to see what was being counted and what wasn't being counted.
For their very survival, insects and other wildlife rely on trees, as well as the diversity of trees. The significant role trees fulfill in terms of providing habitat for wildlife, facilitating ecosystem processes, and enhancing human welfare underscores the utmost importance of our efforts to conserve trees. These efforts are particularly crucial in protecting biodiversity and preventing species extinction. As previously mentioned, trees play a vital role in both our ecosystem and commercial activities. In Canada, there are a total of 234 species of native trees, which encompass a variety of wild species, subspecies, varieties, and other significant units of biological diversity. Among these species, 57 have been identified as being at risk either within Canada or on a global scale. The presence of at-risk trees is found throughout all provinces in Canada, with Ontario leading at 39, followed by Quebec at 12, and British Columbia at 11. According to the 2021 report by the Wildlife Conservative Society and Shape of Nature Initiative, the most significant threats facing Canada's at-risk trees include habitat loss, the invasion of non-native species, and the effects of climate change. Noting that climate change will alter forest health factors based on temperature, moisture patterns, extreme weather events, and their impact on pests and their hosts. With an increased understanding of the importance and appreciation that wildlife animals, insects, mites, fungi, parasitic plants, and non-living, abiotic, elements are all integral components of our forest ecosystem and perform many essential or valuable functions, has led to an increased appreciation in their valuable role in overall forest health. The evolving nature of forest management in British Columbia therefore necessitates further revisions on current forest management practices.
Part of my thing is, this is industry, so it's in the government's best interest to try to figure out, how do we keep more trees? How do we keep the trees healthy? Where are the gaps between the cutting-edge science information and the industry?
In BC, our forest management regime has been focused totally on commercialization of certain species. I mean, there was a time when hemlock was thought to be a weed species, you know, and the only thing valued was basically in the interior, pine and spruce. Things have changed, I think, and I'll give you an indication of why I think it's changed. And it's changing, it hasn't changed. But in this year, 2023, the Forest and Range Practices Act was amended in legislation. FERPA, Forest and Range Practices Act, has 11 objectives, and we could call them values. Biodiversity, water, timber is one of them. All those other 10 values, aside from timber, were placed under everything's equal as long as these other values don't unduly constrain the timber value. And that language obviously made it that all 11 values weren't equal. Timber was primary. So in 2023, in this legislative sitting, the FERPA was amended to eliminate the unduly constrained wording. So I think now, leading into the future, if there's a biodiversity value is not the same, has to be considered by managers at the same level as timber value. So I think that gives me hope that the kind of thing you're talking about, the holistic approach, that to grow a good tree for timber production requires the intact ecosystem that supports it, whether it's willows or aspen or mosses or, you know, mushrooms, everything. So, you know, when legislation changes, it often takes a while to get down onto the ground, but at least that's there now, and the unduly constrained term is not in the legislation any longer.
According to the 2014 Third Revised Edition Field Guide to Pest Management Forests in British Columbia, there has been an intensive research on the damage caused by agents of coniferous trees in the region for over 30 years. Agents like the two-year bugworm, which can cause severe defoliation, stem defects, reduce seed production, a loss in height and volume, and ultimately lead to tree mortality. Additionally, instances of complete defoliation and mortality have been observed by sucking insect agents like the green spruce aphid, or perhaps you've heard of the mountain pine beetle. All of these pose a threat to our trees. Non-infectious or physiological diseases are attributed to non-living agents and encompass a wide array of disruptions to the normal functioning of a tree, such as extreme temperatures, imbalances in water or nutrient levels, or environmental pollutions. The factors contributing to the physiological disorders can be temporary, such as frost, endure for a portion of the growing season, like prolonged drought, or accumulate over several years, particularly from certain pollutions. The 1996 report, Common Tree Diseases of British Columbia, provides examples of these disorders, including abiotic and basal and trunk scars, frost injury, sun scald, winter kill, cedar flagging, top killing, commercial and fume injury, top breakage, sapsucker damage, and flooding. With wind, ice, snow, or hail wounds caused by fire or mechanical agents or animal damage like deer, elk, moose, cattle, snowshoe, hare, cotton rabbit, foals, and beaver are all documented in the 2014 Third Revised Edition Field Guide to Pests of Management Forests in British Columbia. Forest diseases, described as injurious conditions, often expressed by the abnormal growth or development of trees and caused by agents other than fire or insects. Infectious diseases are caused by living agents such as fungi, bacteria, viruses, and higher plants when attack trees to obtain nutrients essential to their development. The insects are categorized as defoliators, sucking insects, and wooded tissue feeders, which include most bark beetles. With categorized based on feeding habits of these groups, with defoliants such as the larva, caterpillars, of moss and sawflies attacking trees of any age, feeding on foliage and buds. Sucking insects, primarily aphids, remove sap from needles, branches, or stems. And woody tissue feeders, such as the mountain pine beetle, found on the outer sapwood, branches, root collar, or roots. The importance of species varieties varies by location, with larvae causing the majority of damage and are the most noticeable life stage. Defoliators are the most common, causing the most damage province-wide, with the exception of certain bark beetles. It is worth noting that under favorable conditions, the population of these pests can thrive, resulting in the transmission of infection to other agent trees and plant species. Moreover, trees can be impacted by various factors simultaneously. As the bark beetle outbreaks often start in over mature stands of coniferous trees or in mature stands that are stressed by drought, defoliation, root disease, or other damaging agents. Under favorable conditions and whenever population numbers are sufficient, bark beetles can attack other healthy trees. Over the years, numerous economic studies and analysis have been conducted to estimate the timber losses because of these and other damage agents. However, historically, the provincial government funded and concentrated research primarily on insect diseases, animals, and abiotic conditions that cause economic damage to what the government deemed commercially important, coniferous trees. In fact, until recently,
Government forestry studies frequently neglected to consider the ecological context of the organism. Although further research is necessary, thankfully the last two decades has witnessed an increase in the enactment of successful management strategies implemented to address agent issues. I'm left with this burning question. If a tree falls, who else has noticed?
You've been listening to If a Tree Falls, a two-part series produced, written, and narrated by River Wild for CICK News, Smithers Community Radio, on the dial at 93.9 FM and online at smithersradio.com. Research for this series incorporated sources from articles, reports, and personal accounts and stories, and includes segments from an interview that took place in northern BC between River Wild and retired NDP MLA Doug Donaldson at his studio cabin in the summer of 2023. To ensure coherence and relevance to the series, the interview has undergone necessary edits. For a complete transcript of the interview, go to CICK News Podcasts on smithersradio.com and find If a Tree Falls. Additional source for this series includes the articles Almost 1 in 4 Tree Species in Canada is at Risk of Disappearing by Daniel Krauss, Edge of Extinction, Shape of Nature. Article New Report Finds That 1 in 4 Trees Are at Risk by Cheryl Santamaria, The Weather Network. Article Canfor Unveils Jumbo Sawmill by Peter Kennedy, Globe and Mail, February 10, 2004. Article, Houston Falling, Supersized Mills Lead to Supersized Problems for BC Forests and Workers, by Ben Parfit, Policy Note, March 2, 2023. And article, British Columbia's Looming Extinction Crisis, by Sarah Cox, The Norwell, August 8, 2020. Reports referenced included NatureServe Canada's 2021-22 Annual Report, IUCN Red List of Threatened Species at IUCNRedList.org, Report, Public Influence on Reforestation in British Columbia, by Robert G. Brown, for the Ministry of Forests, Forest Practices Branch, prepared for the Third Global Conference on Paper and the Environment, London, England, March, 1995, British Columbia Government Publication. And the 1996 report by Canadian Forest Service Publications, Common Tree Diseases of British Columbia, by Allen, Morrison, and Wallace, for the Natural Resources Canada, Canadian Forest Service, Pacific Forestry Centre, Victoria, BC. Additional information for this series was sourced from the 2014 Field Guide to Forest Damage in British Columbia, by Ken White and David Rush, Province of British Columbia, Crown Publications, Queen's Printer, 2014. For a complete reference list and links, please go to smithersradio.com.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.